I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars, big fights, and griping about the way things are weak. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me, running down with life, I'm fighting and talking dying. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count and be free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you walk in on the fight beside me. Yeah, walk in on the fight beside me. Run down with life, I'm fighting in the fog of dying key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, in Toronto last night, or Tuesday night, there was a protest outside of a Toronto library about a lecture by a woman who's a journalist and a feminist, named Megan Murphy. Now, I have no problem with the idea of a protest if people don't like it, but there have been very strong efforts to shut this down. There have been threats against the library that they won't be allowed to march in next year's Gay Pride Parade. Well, I wouldn't consider that a threat. I consider it stupid that they want to march. But anyway, Megan, excuse me, Megan Murphy is a feminist, but she has some strong views about the transgendered, and that basically a man with a penis who thinks he's a woman is still a, no, he's not a woman, he's a man, he's still a man. Well, that is heresy. There were strong attempts to prevent the meeting. Even the mayor of the city said he was troubled by this. John Tory, let's make it quite clear, is no friend of freedom. He tried to prevent us from cafe from having a memorial. That's for somebody who's dead, you know, to honor somebody who's dead, for lawyer Barbara Kalashka back in 2017. So he's absolutely no friend of freedom. Here's a crowd gathered outside the Toronto Library. Looks like a collection of freaks. There's a woman with purple hair and a leopard skin top. No hate in our city. See, hate's very, very loose. Well, what is hate? Well, hate is, I guess, anything somebody who doesn't like you says it is. No hate in our city. TPL, what TWTF? I think that means Toronto Public Library, what the, you know. There's some beefy lesbian looks more like a, well, probably shouldn't call somebody looks like a pig, but tiny little ankles, big legs. This truly is a collection of freaks. Well, let's get to the story. A crowd of 1,000 stood shoulder to shoulder outside the Toronto Public Library's Palmerston branch Tuesday evening, chanting, "Trans rights are human rights, and whose library? Our library." Their library, but can others use it too? To protest a lecture by Megan Murphy. Murphy's a feminist writer who questions both the validity of transgendered individuals and the anti-discrimination laws that protect them. No, it's the discrimination laws that give them special status. In fact, they want to force us to acknowledge or play in the sandbox of the mentally deluded. Men who think they're a woman, women, or the odd woman who thinks she's a man. Quote, "This is our chance to take back Toronto Public Library. It's so amazing to see you, so many people here," said one of the organizers. Adding that they lined up a series of readings by trans authors and poets in the streets outside the library to make it a public space where we celebrate trans voices tonight. Oh, okay, they can celebrate transgendered voices, but why try to shut down a talk? Many of the demonstrators held signs that said, "No hate, no fear," and TPL, transphobes, please leave. So, Toronto Public Library, transphobes, as Megan Murphy, please leave. Another organizer said the Toronto Public Library is hiding behind free speech. What do you mean hiding behind free speech? Free speech is free speech. Nothing to hide behind. It has broken its connection with the queer community by allowing discrimination and hate. You mean by allowing a voice other than the one you want to hear? Chief Librarian Vickery Rebole said the library has an obligation to protect free speech, and a review of Murphy's statements turned up no hate speech convictions or other disqualifiers. Well, okay, fair enough. So she's not being convicted of any crime. About 30 police officers were parked outside the Palmerston Library, some on the steps and others in the parking lot. Murphy's lecture proceeded in a room that was at capacity. The protests at the Palmerston Branch Fall Rally earlier in the day at Barbara Hall Park, where speakers included Sherry DeNovo, United States Church Minister and former MPP, and she questioned the Toronto Public Library's decision to let the lecture go on despite vocal opposition. And the library in this case was absolutely right. They should not be allowed the heckler's veto. That is, if I have a loud enough booming voice, I can shut somebody down. That shouldn't be allowed. Trans individuals are the people who Megan Murphy's rhetoric treats as dangerous imposters, said Speaker Daniel Karasik. That's Daniel as in a man, who identifies as a non-binary trans person. What's that? God only knows. Karasik said that by allowing Murphy to speak at the library, the Toronto Public Library was normalizing her views. No, it's simply providing a place for her to speak. Next week, some trans can speak if they want. Earlier in the day, Murphy said in an interview with the Toronto Star that there's no cohesive definition for transgender. It's based only on self-identification. It's based only on a declaration. Yeah, it's like whatever I think I am. Or feel I am. You know, I wake up this morning, maybe I feel like I'm a cat, so I start to meow. Do you have to meow back at me? No, you don't. That's the problem. I don't care if some male decides he thinks he's a woman. That's his business. But don't force me to recognize you as anything other than a nutcase. So it really doesn't mean anything, said Murphy, who is 40 years old and grew up in Vancouver. So I'm not sure it makes sense to be creating a whole new set of rights for a group of people that doesn't exist in a definable way, she said, referring to Bill C-16, which protects against discrimination based on gender identity and gender expression. And that's been proven to be one that's really stamped on our human rights. She said she believed that some people experience body dysphoria or gender dysphoria, but that doesn't change their sex. And that doesn't mean that the women have to give up their rights and spaces because somebody else is suffering from some form of mental illness because they don't identify with another gender group. And see, this is already intruding into women's sports. There are transgender, these are people who are men, have the body of a man, probably have the strength of a man, competing against real women in women's sports. It's not fair. And there are now women beginning to speak up against it. Women are banned earlier this year from Twitter. Sean Murphy was banned from Twitter after tweeting, "Men aren't women," referring to a transgender person by their biological sex. Wow! See, banned? These pernicious, mind-controlling social media have got to be brought brought to task. In August, she was part of a conference in New Jersey that had to change venues after a public outcry over the speakers. and so this attack on free speech regrettably goes on even in the land of the free. Well, I might have told you so, but these people pouring across the Quebec border, the illegals, allowed in by Trudeau and his, let me think, Muslim, Somali, refugee, immigration lawyer, and former head of the Canadian Somali Association. He's the immigration minister. Yeah, he's the gatekeeper. Ahmed Hassan. Well, here's another one of the winners. Nigerian sex offender who came to Canada via the Roxham Road crossing fights extradition to the U.S. Adesanya Prince appeared in the U.S. There's a picture of him here. He's a registered sex offender in the U.S., crossing to Canada through an irregular crossing in Quebec. No, he's an illegal. There's nothing irregular about it. Because our treasonous government refuses to defend the border, that's what happens. A Nigerian sex offender who crossed into Canada at Roxham Road is appealing his extradition to the U.S. on the grounds he should be considered a refugee. Adesanya Prince is wanted in Harris County, Texas, where he pleaded guilty to a charge of promoting child pornography on February 23rd, 2018. He fled to Canada before he was sentenced. Prince is currently in custody in Canada. Seems to be our problem. Actually, if we were enforcing the law, when he showed up illegally at the border, he would have been turned right back. Prince is currently in custody 19 months after he arrived via Roxham Road. Last March, Justice Minister David Lametti ordered that Prince be returned to the United States. Yet in documents filed with the Quebec's Court of Appeals, Prince is fighting the extradition. You know, he can just rag this around for years. In the appeal, Prince's lawyer, Marie-Hélène Giroux, raises three arguments. She says the minister's order should be quashed because it didn't consider that if returned to the U.S., Prince might be deported to Nigeria. So what? Nigeria is a democratic country. Giroux also argues that the minister should have considered the conditions Prince would face in Texas prisons. And finally, she says the minister didn't have the jurisdiction to determine Prince wasn't a refugee under the United Nations 1951 Refugee Convention. Well, as a matter of fact, we did. We have a safe third party agreement with the United States, which says that a person must, if they're going to make a that person is going to make a refugee claim, make it in the first country they come to, as between Canada and the U.S. So, if you fly into Canada and you want to make a refugee claim, you can't sneak down to the States and make one there. You have to make it in Canada. And conversely, as Prince was in the United States, if he wanted to make a refugee claim, he should have made it there, not here. He's illegal. Toss him out. But, of course, that's not what our government's about to do. the federal government has yet to file a response to Prince's request for the appeal. The Quebec Court of Appeals has not yet set a date, but may hear the case sometime this fall or winter. So no hurry about it, and we continue to have to feed this illegal at taxpayers' expense. Prince, 51, originally consented to extradition on November 1st, 2018. However, according to his lawyer, he later changed his mind. He remains in detention at a Canada Border Services Agency facility north of Montreal. Prince walked across the border into Canada on March 9th, 2018. He had pleaded guilty to a child pornography charge in Texas just days earlier and was out on $10,000 bond awaiting sentencing. Rather than show up for his hearing on May 10th, Prince fled to Canada. Now, you can see this is just a series of legal maneuvers, all at the detriment of the Canadian taxpayer. He originally actually consented to being sent back to the United States, but reneged on that. He faces a minimum of 2 years in prison. Immediately after crossing the border, Prince was detained by the RCMP for questioning at Roxham Road, instead of being just shoved back across the border. He was then turned over to the Canadian Border Services agents for screening. It was during a security background check that the agents found Prince was wanted in Texas on child porn charges. At that moment, he should have been deported immediately. I mean, what do we need these people for? According to documents, court documents obtained by Global News, Prince is originally from Nigeria, but they've been living in Houston, Texas. The documents state that in January 2017, he was working as a security guard when he sent a co-worker 3 videos on a cell phone app. 2 of the videos involved bestiality, while the third depicted the graphic sexual assault of a young girl aged 2 to 4. Oh, great person. This is one of those refugees we need. The co-worker told police that Prince also made unsolicited sexual advances toward her, including on 2 occasions trying to grab her breasts. The court documents include a letter from Harris County Assistant District Attorney Thomas Waddell. In it, Waddell states that Prince presents a danger to Canada and may have been attempting to flee to Nigeria. Well, that'd be okay if we could just get rid of him, put him on a plane to Nigeria. The timing of Prince's flight demonstrates that he was attempting to avoid serving a sentence for the criminal acts for which he admitted guilt. Prince agreed to be extradited to the United States, signing a consent to committal and forfeiting the right to a committal hearing. The last step was for the federal justice minister to sign off on the extradition, which he did in March. See, nobody's in any great hurry. He agreed to the extradition in November. It was 5 months later before the minister of justice got around to signing it. However, before the extradition took place, Prince changed his mind and filed an appeal. Despite being a flight danger and a potential threat, at one point Prince was released from custody and spent 3 days living on the west end of Montreal Island. You just wonder about the justice system. It is totally screwed up. He is an admitted sex offender in the United States. This is even an accusation. He admitted it. And yet he was, at least briefly, allowed free in Canada. This system serves everybody but the public safety. Quebec Superior Court Justice Daniel Royer ordered Prince's released on August 2nd, 2018. The U.S. had filed an extradition request for the imposition of a prosecution, but as Prince had already pleaded guilty, the extradition request should have been made for the imposition of a sentence. Okay, so they made a clerical error. Royer ruled that there was insufficient evidence presented at the hearing to hold Prince for prosecution and ordered him released. This is, of course, a major problem with the whole business of illegals. Until their case is determined, none of these people should walk among us. Well, they shouldn't, but of course they do. The U.S. filed a new provisional arrest request 3 days later and Prince gave himself up to police. In registering a guilty plea in Texas last year, Prince was officially entered into the U.S. Sex Offender Registry, a designation he will hold until the end of his life. So, he is ours, at least for the moment. And you can see our federal government is nobody's in any particular hurry to deal with this guy and get rid of him. And that is one of the huge failures of our entire corrupted immigration system. The absolute failure to protect Canadians. The biggest worry is protecting the so-called rights of aliens. Anyway, so stay tuned. He remains ours at least for the moment. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Lots more news coming up, and let's see what we've got here. Oh, yes. Southern Poverty, big changes at the Southern Poverty Law Center. This is one of the most powerful anti-free speech groups in the United States, perhaps after the ADL, the most powerful. It keeps intelligence on right-wingers and patriots and puts out defamatory information whenever it can, tries to ruin careers, out people, and so on. And one of the main perps there is a woman named Heidi Byrish. And she's been around, I would say, for going on 20 years. Big fat Heidi. The leader of the Southern Poverty Law Center's intelligence project is stepping down amid an ongoing leadership shakeup at the anti-hate organization. Well, I wouldn't say it's anti-hate. It's anti-white and anti-free speech. I remember a couple of conferences where Heidi Byrish tried to infiltrate, and we managed to thwart her, but Heidi Byrish will leave the Southern Poverty Law Center, ending a 20-year run-in with the organization, she told staffers Monday. Her exit follows several resignations and terminations of SPLC leadership this year, including its co-founder, who was accused of repeated sexual harassment of employees. In fact, the whole atmosphere, apparently, at the Southern Poverty Law Center was considered to be poisonous. A poisonous work environment with racial harassment. Southern Anti-Poverty Law, anti-racist and all that. But the minorities there felt that they were discriminated against, and boo hoo 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 hoo. Anyway, let's get back to Heidi. Her exit follows several resignations and terminations of Southern Poverty Law Center leadership this year, including its co-founder, who was fired amid sexual harassment allegations, and a deputy legal director who said the organization had more work to do to guarantee a respectful workplace. Talk about people living in glass houses tossing stones, eh? Byrish has worked for the SPLC for 20 years. An expert on the neo-Confederate movement, she led the SPLC's intelligence project, which produced much of the center's front-facing journalism, including its Intelligence Report magazine and Hate Watch blog. In a Monday memo to staff, she cited the two-decade anniversary as a reason for her departure. It's with a heavy, heavy heart, given how deeply I care about this work and all of you amazing people, she wrote. As some of you may know, I reached my second decade here in September, and I felt for a while now that it may be time for a change for me. It's been a long and intense last few years for me, especially since Trump graced us with his presence and then with the challenges here at the SPLC, and I'm ready for a break and a new start. In a statement, Byrish said the SPLC publications would carry on in her absence. I'm proud of the work that we have done and the work that the SPLC will continue to do to shine a spotlight on hate and extremism, including our Year in Hate report, our intelligence report magazine, the Hate Watch blog, our investigative projects, and we are now looking into opportunities to expand into new media. So the SPLC has been a major menace to free speech for many years. But the SPLC has been undergoing institutional upheaval since March when the center co-founder, Morris Dees, age 82, who founded the SPLC with two other lawyers in 1971 and brought the center to fame with successful lawsuits against the Ku Klux Klan and similar patriotic organizations beginning in the late 1970s. But recent decades reportedly saw internal complaints against Dees. The SPLC acknowledged this year that he was twice investigated for inappropriate conduct, whatever that is, although Dees denies wrongdoing. In March, two separate sets of SPLC employees penned letters to the center leadership referencing allegations of sexual harassment and racial discrimination connected to Dees. Allegations of mistreatment, sexual harassment, gender discrimination, and racism threaten the moral authority of this organization and our integrity along with it, one employee wrote. You know, so, the SPLC publicly announced Dees firing hours after employees sent the letter, the New York Times reported. His firing was reportedly the result of the second misconduct investigation against him. The second group of employees alleged the problems went further than Dees and penned a letter after his firing, accusing the SPLC leadership of being complicit in decades of racial discrimination, gender discrimination, and sexual harassment and or assault. Now this is, you've got to laugh at this. This is the anti-racist, you know, super equality organization, the Southern Poverty Law Center. Irish was among those who supported Dees' ouster. SPLC President Richard Cohen resigned the following week in order to give the organization the best chance to heal. Other March resignations include SPLC Legal Director Rhonda Bromstein, a large number of Jews there, and Deputy Legal Director Meredith Horton. Horton claimed in her resignation announcement that the SPLC had more work to do to become a place where everyone is heard and respected and where the values we are committed to pursuing externally are also practiced internally. Well, that's a good idea. The center announced that it would undergo a workplace culture review prompted by the Dees' dismissal. That review is reportedly ongoing. Now, whether her Heidi Byrish's moving on is entirely of her own volition, I guess we're in no real position to say. There's a really interesting incident that occurred in Toronto yesterday. And involved another one of our immigration imports, and he's quite famous or infamous. And so this video shows a Toronto shows a suspect pulling out a handgun while handcuffed in the back of a Toronto police cruiser. A little bit of an embarrassment, I think, there, right? Wouldn't you say? And if we can just get this thing up on the screen. And this involves, Toronto police say they're investigating after a video recently surfaced of a suspect pulling out a handgun while sitting handcuffed in the back of a police cruiser. Well, the police are really upset. How did this video get out? Who took it? Was it a video from within the police car? Well, I mean, probably some policeman leaked it. Well, they're actually more upset about the exposure than they are about the incident. Okay. Police say they are investigating after a video recently surfaced of a suspect pulling out a handgun after sitting handcuffed in the back of a police cruiser. Police said the incident occurred on Sunday when officers responded to a call about an impaired driver in the Esplanade area just east of Lower Jarvis. Investigators say they located the suspect in the driver's seat of a car and conducted a pat-down search before arresting the individual over alleged alcohol offenses. He was driving drunk, apparently. According to police, in the midst of transporting the accused to a nearby station, officers in the car heard the sound of something hitting the floor in the back seat. When they stopped to open the back door of the cruiser, a semi-automatic pistol was found on the floor in front of the accused. Officers said the gun was confiscated and an additional search conducted before bringing the suspect to 41 Division for breath tests and processing. The accused has been identified as Ali Shobeg, 38, of Mississauga, and he faces 9 criminal charges, 8 of which are gun-related. Ali Shobeg, he's a Muslim. He has you see that in the video, this bearded guy, you know, with that full-face beard. Police said they issued a safety notice to officers to inform them of the method of firearm concealment used in the incident. Chief Mark Saunders said in a statement that the incident is under investigation to assess as to whether it is a training or disciplinary matter. Our officers face risks every day in their jobs, he said. In this case, a call for a suspected impaired driver resulted in multiple firearms-related charges against an individual who allegedly concealed the firearm during his arrest by police. The officers conducted a search of the accused, and the gun was not detected. Saunders said he also ordered a full investigation into the leaking of an in-car camera video, saying it's a clear break of protocol and procedure. What he's upset about is it showing the public a little bit of what's going on. Well, we can't have that, you know, right, you know, secrecy and all that. Mayor John Tory, he's a wimp if there ever was one, has also responded to the video, saying he's looking forward to seeing what recommendations come out of the investigations to rectify these types of situations. Search suspects more carefully, maybe? It's a disconcerting story to think that somebody who's inside a police car or anywhere else, for that matter, has a gun, especially after they've been searched. It says Tory. Mike McCormick, the president of the Toronto Police Association, calls the incident really concerning and disturbing. This person had that firearm so well hidden that it wasn't detected. It's very scary and concerning video when we see someone pulling out a firearm in the back of a police car. It turns out that I believe he is an immigrant. Yeah, well, how did he get to Canada? Well, we don't know. Ali Shobeg was involved back in 2005 in a shooting, and he was given a lifetime ban from owning a firearm. So not only was the firearm illegal, and it would be almost certainly be illegal, a permit to carry a handgun is very, very hard to get. So he didn't have a permit to carry a handgun. There'd be a number of weapons charges just on that alone. But beyond that, and really aggravating everything, is the fact that he was under a lifetime ban. In every possible way, should not have had that handgun. Now, it doesn't look very good on the police that he was able to conceal it from me, even after a pat-down. But I think he was probably trying to get rid of it in the police cars. But be that as it may, as in so many of these cases, what we wanted to do is to look at the immigration angle. Who is this guy? How did he get to Canada? Is there any possible way that we can deport him? Of course, Mayor John Tory would be only too happy to have a a ban on the possession of handguns anywhere in the city of Toronto. Now, let's very carefully do something that very often is not done, and that is think. Now, how would a ban on handguns have done anything in this case? He was already banned from owning a handgun. So that direct court order didn't faze him. Why would we think that an additional court order an additional ban, a law saying can't have a handgun in the city of Toronto unless you're a cop? How would that affect anything? Well, it wouldn't affect it at all. And that's the problem with gun control, with the most gun control. It wouldn't affect anything at all, except, and here's the sad thing, it would affect law-abiding people, law-abiding gun owners who would say, okay, I will give up my guns. And that's, of course, ultimately what they want. It's not crime control that they're after. It's people control. And that's what that's what this is all about. It's people control. We don't need gun control. We need criminal control. Anyway, we'll be following that story and see where it goes. Yes. The most taxed jurisdiction in the United States of America, Massachusetts. It seems that they careen from one politically correct idiocy to another. Massachusetts bill would jail people for using the word bitch. Whether this would survive a court challenge, I don't know. Hopefully it will not. But the very fact that this is even proposed in the land of the free and the home of the brave is scary. And on the weekend, I had the opportunity to talk to videographer Jim Mazzoli and Diane King at some considerable length. We had two meetings for them in Southern Ontario, one in Toronto, one in Hamilton. And one of the themes I kept hitting, including in an interview I did with Jim Mazzoli, is that we must never let our fellow citizens believe we live in a free world. Many people naively believe that, especially in the United States. We're the home of the free. We've got the First Amendment. Well, yeah, the First Amendment says that government may not pass legislation to restrict free speech, although this would seem to be exactly such a case. But it doesn't prevent organizations from doing that. It doesn't prevent campuses from driving out people with dissident views. It doesn't prevent outfits like Facebook or Twitter from exercising censorship against free speech. And of course, in Canada, we're much less free. So anyway, we should always point out to our fellow citizens: don't kid yourself. You don't live in a free country. Anyway, well, what's this stuff about bitch? On Tuesday, Massachusetts legislators considered a bill that would criminalize certain uses of the word bitch, making it punishable by up to 6 months in prison or a fine of up to $200. The bill, introduced a month ago by State Democratic Representative Dan Hunt, states that a person who uses the word bitch directed at another person to accost, annoy, degrade, or demean the other person shall be considered to be a disorderly person and be guilty of a criminal offense punishable by a fine of not more than either $150 or $200, or jail time of up to 6 months. I don't even get that. A fine of not more than either $150 or $200. Well, what is it? Okay. So if you use the word bitch directed at another person to accost, annoy, degrade, or demean them, I guess they wouldn't even have to be present. So if I call Heidi Byrish, let's say, a bitch, that in Massachusetts, I guess that could be a problem if this law passes. As many legal scholars have pointed out, the proposed law is blatantly unconstitutional. For example, Eric Kahn, the former director of the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, told the Washington Examiner, "The First Amendment does not and cannot sanction prohibiting words simply because they are subjectively used to degrade or demean. If the word bitch can be outlawed when used to demean, why can't MAGA, that'll make America great again, or liberal?" Going down the road, Representative Hunt proposes, would expose to prosecution nearly all the speech the First Amendment was meant to protect. So it may not, in fact, go very far. But the very fact it's even tried is scary. Jim Manley, an attorney for the Pacific Legal Foundation, which litigates free speech issues, told Reason something similar. As the Superior Court has said, there's no happy talk requirement in the First Amendment. You cannot ban a word that's used to annoy someone, but let them use the word when they're using the word in a positive way. Legislatures can't just pluck words out of the dictionary and ban them. Basically, the consensus is clear that this would not and could not ever become law. But honestly, I still find myself disturbed by the fact that it was even discussed in the legislature in the first place. After all, this means that the public servants in Massachusetts actually have so little knowledge of the Constitution, which the taxpayers are paying them to protect, that they spent their taxpayer time earnestly considering. And I think this is a very good point. Of course, in many ways, Massachusetts, the Boston Tea Party, etc., is the cradle of the revolution. It's so sad that they truly do not get it. Well, this is Paul Prom, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhatResistanceRadio.com. I'm going to take a musical break now, and I'm going to play some songs by a man who had a great family tradition. This, of course, is Hank Williams Jr., and of course, he's Hank Williams Sr.'s son, and for a while he was in his father's shadow, but as time went on, he became very much his own, developed his own type of music. I would call it country rock. Spirited Hank Williams Jr.
Thank you. Thank you.
Jr. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. Back with you again tomorrow. Same time, midnight Eastern Time. The time show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our pride and joined in love together. The thistle, shamrock, rose entwine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever.